Labor for February 12th, 2014. We have three public hearings and work sessions to start out with. These are the people that were supposed to be hearing. We were supposed to hear them last Friday, but got weathered out. So I'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 4014. Mr. Miller, if you'd like to come forward. Yes, if Jan wants to give a little, thank you for reminding me. Would you like to give a summary of House Bill 4014?
I do. Madam Chair, committee members, this is the first time this has been before the committee. This measure allows the immediate termination of portable electronic insurance policy without notice if the customer ceases to have a wireless service with the limited licensee who is the vendor policyholder. And it provides if the insurer or the supervising entity does not provide timely notice of termination of coverage under that portable electronic insurance, then the insurance continues even if the enrolled customer exhausts their aggregate liability limit. Comes of operative July 1st, 2014, declares an emergency, and there's no amendment, there's no revenue impact, and there's no fiscal impact.
Okay, Mr. Miller.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of Assurion, which is the leading provider of cell phone insurance through your carriers. So they work through carriers such as AT&T and Verizon to be able to offer this product. It's, again, it's a voluntary product. If you want to purchase insurance, it's available through those carriers and all carriers. And what the bill does, and just by just a brief background, just a couple sessions ago through Representative Holby's committee, portable electronics insurance was actually put under the insurance code. So prior to that, it was actually unregulated, even though it is an insurance product. And so it was placed under the insurance code. And so today's this bill, House Bill 4014, which we support, actually just updates one notification requirement to match it up with all the other states that have adopted this portable electronics insurance code. And so what the bill does, and there's two forms of automatic termination in the law currently today for cell phone insurance. One of them is if you, and it's on page 2 of the bill, up towards the top, lines 2 through 6, and basically if you stop your active service, that's one way, obviously, of terminating because you actually stopped your service with your carrier, whether it's through AT&T or Verizon. And then the second way is through essentially if you exhaust the limits of your policy. And I'll talk a little just briefly about that and what that means. But those two different circumstances is how you can immediately terminate the coverage. And to explain the difference between the two, you have to understand how this works. The coverage that you buy is or purchase is actually through the wireless carrier. So it's on the AT&T bill, even though Assurion is the company that underwrites, you know, the product, the insurance product. It's through AT&T, or it's through Verizon, or it's through Sprint. And it's connected by the wireless service. So it's not really, you know, even though the insurance is on your phone, if you stop wireless service with AT&T, you know, you're stopping your insurance coverage, essentially. And so the difference between these two different notification requirements is, one, the consumer makes the choice. So if the consumer says, I'm switching from AT&T to Verizon, you're actually terminating, you know, your agreement with one of the carriers. You're terminating your insurance agreement. So then you can choose to get it with the other carrier. What the current law says now is if the consumer chooses to do that 30 days after you choose to cease the service, the insurance carrier has to send a notification saying you're terminated. Well, it's kind of mute at that point because the customer already terminated the agreement. So this it's something that was put in here, and I think by mistake. Now again, we don't think it's needed to tell somebody that their coverage is terminated after they've already terminated coverage. And so with that, to explain what we are keeping in here, I think it's still important, is if the customer exhausts their limits under the cell phone insurance policy, then and they get terminated. Obviously, that's an insurance carrier's decision, and notification is obviously required at that point. Just so you know, most carriers have to exhaust limits. I think AT&T and Verizon, you can have two claims in a 12-month period of time. So, you know, you could have this phone replaced twice before you exhaust your limits under the policy. I think Sprint's three times, so it's competitive. But in that case, what we are adding to this language, though, Madam Chair, is that if the insurer does not timely send the notice of termination, notwithstanding that the customer exhausted their limits, that coverage still continues. And so, again, it's a consumer protection issue that if you do not send the notice promptly, you're going to continue to receive that even though you've exhausted your limits. So that's language that we're adding for the consumer. And with that, Madam Chair, that's all the bill does, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Again, no Representative Holvey just arrived, but this bill did, you know, kind of go through his committee a couple sessions ago again, but this is, I believe, just a technical fix to this notice of termination. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? I know that some of you came in. Nothing? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to close. Sean, you were the only one on the list. Anybody else would like to speak on this bill? Okay, I think what we're going to do with some of these with no opposition, we're just going to also do a work session or work session at the same time. I close the public hearing on House Bill 4014, and there was no fiscal on this, correct?
There is no fiscal, no revenue.
Okay. And I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 4014.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4014 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Barton moves House Bill 4014 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I just want to mention that even though it looks like many of us didn't get to hear this, we actually, probably most of us, had conversations beforehand, so we were familiar with it that direction, and that this was good to get on the record, but I just want to make sure that we aren't just voting on this blindly.
Thank you very much.
On that point, those three insurance bills, all the proponents worked them thoroughly and had conversations beforehand, which I appreciate. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, any other discussion?
Well, I'll just mention that I appreciate Mr. Miller, coming to me early with this and going over the changes they were making from the bill that we had passed previously, and I'm supportive of it. So.
Okay, thank you.
And
okay.
Chair Doherty, I'm just impressed that you're able to get this job done, and, it had troubles in other committees, it sounds like, but you were very vigorous on getting this taken care of. So.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay, any other discussion? Okay, seeing none. Nick, could you call the roll, please?
Yeah. Six footer all over my head.
Aye.
Never do get his humorous.
Representative. Huh? Madam Chair. Representative Freeman.
Freeman excused.
Thank you.
Representative Holmes. Aye.
Representative
Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative
Thompson. Aye. Representative Whitman. Aye. Vice Chair Barton. Aye. Vice Chair Taylor. Aye. Chair Doherty. Aye. Okay, motion passes. And Representative Krieger is on this bill, so I'll ask him if he'd like to carry it. And if not, we'll have one of the Business and Labor Committee people do it. Okay. So I'll close the work session on House Bill 4014, if I didn't already. And I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 4051. Jan, if you could give us a little summary.
This is a measure that permits property and casualty insurers under specified conditions to post insurance policy and endorsements on the insurer's website instead of mailing the documents. There are no amendments. There's no revenue impact. There's a minimal fiscal impact, but no statement issued.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have signed up Mr. Burrows, Mr. Miller.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
My name is Dave Barrows, and I'm here today representing Progressive Auto Insurance, the client that has asked me to bring this bill to the legislature. They've done this, enacted legislations has, like this has been enacted in other states. This bill very simply says if you purchase a property or casualty policy and the company chooses to set up a program, this program, what they would do was would be to mail to you the declaration page, and that's the normal first page on your insurance policy that says everything about your policy, amount, exceptions, all the stuff about your policy. Then you go to page 2 of your policy, and these are general standard. Most policies contain all the same language for Progressive, and each company would, I think, say the same thing. This would say, when they send the deck page to you in the mail, they would say to you two things. One, if you would like to read the remainder of your policy, the general boilerplate language, here is the website you go to. And if you go to it, you will see just general standard language, nothing about your policy, specific, with your name on it or anything like that. That's all on the deck page, which was mailed to you. Secondly, it will also say, if you would like a copy of the policy, we will be delighted to mail to you. Just call this 800 number, and we'll send it right out in the mail. And the bill also provides that following the termination of the relationship between the policyholder and the company must archive the entire policy for that individual for 10 years.
Okay. Mr. Miller, would you like to continue? Yeah,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I'm here today representing the Property Casualty Insurers Association, the National Trade Association, and we're supportive of House Bill 4052. As Dave indicated, it's a fairly new concept, but it has been enacted in 13 states. And, again, this is the generic portion of the forms, the similar forms that are filed with the State Insurance Division. So, the personalized portion of your policy, as Dave said, is that deck page. Then you would that would still be mailed to you. Mm-hmm. You then would have the ability then to go look at and click on a link and go to that web page to view the rest of it, which I don't know how many people have read. Probably the attorneys in the room have read the rest of that, but most people just read the deck
page. It's important stuff.
Yeah. And, so, Madam Chair, that's really what the bill does, and we're very supportive. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the panelists? Okay. Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience that's not on the list that would like to speak?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Seeing that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4015 and open up a work session on House Bill 4015.
4051. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4051 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Barton moves House Bill 4051 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay. Just kind of my only comment is it's everything is getting a little more modern and updating with the times. So anyway, that's what the bill does.
What it does.
Okay, any other further discussion? Okay, seeing none, Nick, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Freeman?
Excuse me.
Common mistake. Aye.
Charity is hard to find in the morning.
Representative Freeman?
Excused.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kammerer?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. Is there anyone that would like to take this to the floor?
I could.
Okay, Representative Kinnamer will carry the bill. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 4051 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 4052. Dan, if you could summarize.
It's another insurance issue. This one provides an electronic record that is providing or delivering a notice, an offer, a disclosure, a document, a form, correspondence, information, or other communication that's required or permitted under the insurance code satisfies the requirement for the provision or availability to the consumer in writing. It provides that if proof of mailing of the notice is sufficient proof of notice, then confirmation of electronic delivery is sufficient proof of notice. Declares an emergency effective on passage. You have before you a dash one amendment, and it allows oral communication or the recording of to qualify as the notice or the document delivered by electronic means, as long as the insurer can reliably store that recording or reproduce the recording. There is no revenue impact on the dash one. There's no fiscal impact on the dash one.
Okay, thank you. We have Alex Scheibel and Sean Miller.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Alex Scheibel for Nationwide Insurance. I will give the overview of the underlying bill, and Mr. Miller will take on the amendment. And I did just hand a paper copy of my testimony, which I think is just ironic since this bill is against paper copies as part of the modernization. House Bill 4052, it amends the Oregon's Electronic Transaction Act, which allows electronic communications for various consumer businesses. And in particular, this is for property casualty insurance. And right now, you can have all of your communications for property casualty electronically. There's one situation that if there's a termination or cancellation, and I communicate that to you as the consumer electronically, and you don't acknowledge it by hitting a button, I then have to send you a paper copy. So essentially, what this does is cleans that up and says that's no longer needed. A couple caveats. Number one is that this is an opt-in only, so as opposed to 4051, which is not necessarily an opt-in. That's what the insurance companies are going to post. This is up to the consumer. So if you want to continue to get paper copies, if you don't have email, everything stays the same. And the other point that I'd like to make is that the insurance division last session has already acknowledged to the industry that this is an acceptable practice. So it really makes the statute consistent with the practice. And lastly, I'll just say it does not impact the health insurance or life insurance written requirements on cancellation or termination. So with that, I'll leave for questions or something to address the amendment.
Welcome, Mr. Miller.
Yeah, again, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller representing Property Casualty Insurers Association. As you stated, there is a theme today on trying to update these statutes according to the technology and what we're finding with consumers and how they actually want to receive their information more electronically. And month by month, it seems like more and more people want to go there and stop the paper from coming to them. So we're very supportive of the 4052. We did draft a dash one amendment prior to session. That we didn't catch when we drafted the original bill, but is in actually most of the states and all the states that have this particular model act as enacted. And what it does is it allows for different marketing channels when you are interfacing with a consumer or customer and they choose maybe to purchase the insurance over the phone. Less is the example here where at that point, after you get through and you have the choice, as Alex said, to opt in to receive your notifications electronically, if you ask them, do you want to receive over the phone notices electronically, and they say yes, the affirmative, that would be considered qualifying as notice for delivery of these electronic means. And so, but again, if you look at the Dash 1 amendment, the insurer is responsible to reliably store and reproduce that oral communication. So you have to have that ability to say if someone gives the affirmative, you have to have the documentation or backup that, yes, I know as an insurance company that that was the choice of that customer to make that decision. So it's not not necessarily in writing, but it is something that they have to reproduce that they did agree to that. So that's what the Dash 1 amendment does, and so we would support the Dash 1 along with the bill. Madam Chair, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the panelists? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, seeing none. I close the public hearing on House Bill 4052 and open up a work session on House Bill 4052.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4052. I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4052.
Okay, Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay. Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the Dash 1 amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4052 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Barton moves House Bill 4052 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Nick, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Fagan?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Yes.
After we do this.
Mm-hmm. Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
I did. Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Representative White?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenner?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. Anyone, would we have a carrier on this one? Okay. Representative Widener. So Representative Widener will close or carry the bill. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 4052.
Madam Chair, our friend Representative Freeman, not to be confused with Representative Fagan, just a few votes, and I'd like to suspend the rules to allow him to vote on House Bills 4051 and 4014, please.
Okay. Representative Barton moves that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Freeman to vote. Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none. Representative Freeman, how would you vote on House Bill 4014?
Yes.
Okay. It should be shown that Representative Freeman is a yes. And I would ask you how you would like to vote on House Bill 4051.
Yes.
Okay. Let it be shown that it's also an affirmative. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. Okay. Okay, Scott, we got the fiscal on it. Okay, stand in recess just for a moment. We're not going to be having a public hearing. We're just going to go straight into a work session on House Bill 4011. So I open up a work session on House Bill 4011. Jan, if you can summarize.
Madam Chair, this is the pawnbroker measure that the committee heard 2 days ago. You now have before you the Dash 1 amendment, and it clarifies that a county or a city may not require a precious metal secondhand dealer that's also licensed as a pawnbroker to provide a photograph of the precious metal item acquired in the pawn transaction. So it clarifies it's the pawn transaction, not a buy-sell transaction. There's no revenue impact on the Dash 1. There's a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued on the Dash 1.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments be adopted in House Bill 4011.
Okay, Representative Barton moves it to adopt the Dash 1 amendments. Is there any discussion?
I wish all amendments were this simple.
Yeah, the amendment was the addition of one word. One word. Okay. Is there any discussion? Representative Freeman?
Yeah, I apologize for being late today.
That's okay.
Did this help the issue around some of the, like the Sheriff's Association and stuff? They were sort of concerned. I'm curious if it helped them on the bill.
Yeah, I think if they have, we've not heard anything from them.
Okay.
And on this bill, and I know that there was a question as the delineation between what we call, for lack of a better word, secondhand stores, which is a buy and sell, versus a pawn, and the pawn very highly regulated, and the one word pawn was left out of a pawn transaction. So they still have, you know, to hold the item for 90 days and all this kind of thing, or a buy and sell, which I think the local localities have more of regulations over those are not under that. So
I think it did resolve law enforcement's concern.
Yes.
At least I'm voting yes on it under that assumption. I hope I'm right.
Okay. Is there anyone here that would like to speak on this question?
I think their absence speaks.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's what we're all concluding, Madam Chair, if I may, and if they should have been here if they had other questions.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the question. Any other questions? Any other discussion? Okay, seeing none. Nick, could you call the roll, please?
This is the amendment.
Is there any objection to the amendment? Okay, the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4011 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves House Bill 4011 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion on the major bill? Okay, seeing none. Nick, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative Brilliant?
Yes.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Representative
Turner? Aye.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenemer?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. Is there anyone that would like to carry this on the floor?
Madam Chair, I'll carry it.
Representative Witt will carry it on the floor. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 4011 and open up a... Do you want to have a hearing? We'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 4104. Jan, if you could summarize.
Committee members, this is a measure that was before the committee last week that changes how interim medical benefits are paid when the worker is waiting for a workers' compensation claim to be accepted or denied. You have before you a proposed -2 amendment that replaces the original measure. And I don't know if Representative Holby was wanting to describe the amendment or...
I'm sure you can do a fine job. I'll fill in if I feel necessary.
It deletes limiting interim medical benefits to the certain types of services, requires the health plan to expedite pre-authorizations and the guarantee of payment of expenses for medical services that are provided prior to the acceptance or denial of the claim according to the terms, the conditions, and benefits of the plan. And it requires workers' comp insurer to pay any balance after the health benefit plan makes a payment. Requires the workers' comp insurer, the self-insured employer, to, if the claim is accepted, to pay for the medical services provided, including reimbursements to the injured worker or the benefit plan. And it specifies that the workers' comp insurer can recover any expenses for interim medical benefits only on denied claims. Requires the health benefit plan, if the claim is denied, to pay for the medical services, providing to the terms and conditions of the plan. Specifies that the health benefit plan may not exclude and shall expedite pre-authorizations required for work-related injuries when the worker is waiting for the claim to be determined. And it requires the health benefit plan to guarantee payment of pre-authorized medical services according to the terms and conditions of the plan if the claim is not found to be a compensable workers' compensation claim. There is no revenue impact. The committee is waiting to hear on the fiscal impact, so at this point you wouldn't be able to take final action.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay. With that, we have Courtney Dresser signed up, please. We usually are not in front of our committee.
At 8 a.m. too. I'm a healthcare lobbyist. We're afternoon people. For the record, Courtney Dresser with the Oregon Medical Association. And since I am not here very often, OMA is an 8,000-member organization of physician assistants, and medical students here in Oregon. We haven't testified yet, so I just wanted to put on the record that we are very supportive of this concept and the intent of this bill. We have some questions on how the process will work, and we realize we'll be doing that in the rulemaking part of this bill. So, and just a side note, if we can put in guarantee payment of expenses for medical services on everything, that would be great. If we can do that all the time.
Providers. Valentine's Day every month.
I take it as a friendly amendment to
just
everything.
So thank you very much to Representative Holby and to the committee for hearing this bill. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. We did have one other. John Powell had to go to another.
Representative Holt.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't have a question. I was just going to make a comment.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I just appreciate the agencies and all the stakeholders, you know, that helped us get to this language. And I think everybody's in agreement with the policy that this is trying to achieve the goal. As you recall, it was the situation in this interim benefit period where somebody has a health plan and workers' comp coverage, and this is just meant to make sure they are covered and they can get the treatment they need instead of waiting and perhaps not getting any treatment. I know that Mr. Powell and Regents still had some issues around some of the language. I think most of the stakeholders are comfortable with the language, but we do want to continue the conversation on the going towards the other side to make sure if there's any other tweaks that can be agreed to, that we look at those for them as well. Speaking to Courtney's question about how it would work, I think the language does sort of spell it out, but it takes a little bit to understand what that language really means, because it takes a lot of lawyers looking at it, and you know there can be some differences of opinion on that. But the providers would submit a claim to the worker for a work-related injury to the worker comp carrier, as I understand this proposal, and if it's before the determination, they would also submit a pre-authorization request from the health plan insurer for benefits or treatment that under the terms of that health plan, and the provider would be providing under 656247 in the interim medical benefits. I just want to make sure that everybody knows that this is just about the interim medical benefits. It doesn't address after the determination is made, you know, what happens. But it does assure the providers that they're going to get payment, which is a big hole in this system for those interim benefits. And so they don't usually, a lot of times, don't happen because providers are, and they don't oftentimes, and workers will shy away from filing worker comp claims because they're unsure or uncertain if they're ever going to get paid or how much. And so I think this will provide some assurance in the system to actually get some of those claims properly filed as worker comp claims instead of walking away from it and just filing everything on the health plan. So I think it's potentially a win-win situation for the workers, the health plan, and the comp carriers to help fulfill the mission. There was also some questions about the billing and how that worked. Upon the authorization, the provider is assured of a payment by either the comp carrier or the health plan, depending on the determination of compensability. And, it's also the billing for those interim benefits would go to the health plan in that interim benefit period if they were to bill it at that point for the pre-authorized services, but nothing in the bill requires payment until after the determination by the comp carrier. However, if the payment's made by the health plan and the comp claim is accepted, the health plan is reimbursed, and the provider and the consumer are also reimbursed to the fee schedule of the comp carrier. I'm appreciative that you gave me just a little time to explain that, and I guess my layman terms as opposed to the legal aspects of it. Thank you very much for considering this.
Okay. Thank you very much. Does anybody else want to testify, Mr. Powell? Do you want to say anything?
Representative Freeman. Yes.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the explanation. I think I heard this, but I want to ask it real clear. So a insurance plan that has negotiated a different rate structure than workman's comp, if they're going to be paying the benefit, they can pay at their rate, not the workman's comp rate?
Well, generally, they would pre-authorize under the terms of their plan, and so that's the benefits they would be providing. And so if, in fact, it is a accepted claim, and I'll probably have maybe the...
Nod of the head back. That is correct.
That we'll have them come up and give you the specific details. But essentially, the comp carrier reimburses for the... If it's a denied claim or an accepted claim, the worker comp reimburses the health plan for the expenses or that have been paid or the services provided during that interim benefit period. So if it's accepted claim, it goes to the worker comp fee schedule, and so sometimes that's generally, I understand, like 95-99% of the time is a higher benefit than the health plan. So I guess you would call it an overage, then goes to the, once they pay the health plan, they would also reimburse the provider and the worker, you know, for co-pays, which are usually covered under the worker comp system. So basically the provider, the injured worker, and the health plan all get reimbursed by the comp.
Okay. Would you like DCBS to come up, or did you?
Well, I'm wanting to get a couple things on the record, so I don't mind how we get it on the record. So,
well, I may ask them to come up and fill in the blanks of answers that I give.
Well, that'd be fine.
Okay.
Madam Chair, maybe we should just have to come up for convenience.
Okay. So. Why don't you guys come up and just see if there are any questions that people
have. While they're coming up, this was supposed to be up in front of MLAC. We've already had an MLAC meeting about this. It's going to be coming back up before MLAC on Friday.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we hope to have the MLAC recommendation by the time this would hit the floor.
More questions?
Yeah, so I'll ask a couple of them, and maybe you all can answer. Thank you for being here. So my question is during this interim period, a health benefit plan or a self-insurer generally negotiates rates less than the fee schedule for workman's comp. So my question is, during this interim period, when either the benefit plan or the self-insurer is paying for the services, will they be paying at their negotiated amount, or will they have to pay at the higher workman's comp fee schedule amount?
Madam Chair, Representative Freeman,
Yourself, please.
I'll let you get it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm John Schultz. I'm the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division. Excuse me. We're part of Department of Consumer and Business Services. If the claim for which medical services are provided is denied by the workers' compensation carrier, and the health benefit plan is then responsible to provide the benefits to the worker, the health benefit plan would pay for medical services according to the terms, conditions, and benefits of their plan or policy. So they would pay at their normal rate.
And that includes self-insurers?
It includes, as defined in the bill, health benefit plans. Self-insured employers for workers' compensation purposes would, along with workers' compensation insurers, would pay to the workers' compensation fee schedule when the claim is accepted. So I don't think I'm answering
your question. We're almost there. So if a workman's, self-insurer has negotiated rates less than the workman's comp fee schedule, during the interim period, if they're having to pay benefits, they can pay at their lower negotiated rate, not at the higher fee schedule, even if they're self-insured for both workman's comp and benefit plan.
Chair Doherty, Representative Freeman, yes, that's my understanding as well.
Thank you. And one last thing, and then I'll be all done.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Chair Doherty, Representative Freeman, just making it clear, the bill doesn't require a payment prior to the decision. So during that interim period, there may be no payments, but it gives the provider the ability to know that they will ultimately be paid.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of currently, what may happen is you've got a worker who has a health insurance plan as well as a workers' comp claim. If the provider contacts the health insurance to say, well, if it's denied, well, you know, what are the terms, conditions that I'll be paid under? And typically they're not going to get an answer on that until a decision is made, so the worker goes without treatment until that decision. Yeah. My belief of this bill is that during that interim period, the provider would be given a green light that ultimately they would be paid. But the portion of the bill that requires the reimbursement would be if by chance the health insurer did pay or if by chance the worker paid a copay. Because my belief is we still don't believe that workers should have to be paying out of pocket to begin with. It's just that if they happen to, we want to make sure that if the claim is accepted under workers' comp that there's a reimbursement process.
Okay, and if you could identify yourself.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
We know you. But yes.
I'm Jennifer Flood. I'm the Ombudsman for Injured Workers with DCBS.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you for that explanation. I understand the reimbursement part after the determination.
Right.
But as a, if a provider's looking at this, they're going to get paid something. My question was, are they expecting to get paid the rate schedule or whatever the negotiated benefit plan schedule is? So you've answered that. I guess the last thing I would say, and hopefully this is something you all are working on, so again, I'm glad you're here. Part of the solution to this problem is to get those determinations done quicker. So I know we're talking about expediting insurance companies and making sure they're doing the predetermination and all, whatever they're doing. But having your shop expedite the time in which we'd established whether it's workman's comp claim would also help resolve some of this issue, too. So hopefully we're working both sides. So with that, I'm all done talking. Sorry I held you up for
no,
extra
no.
5 minutes.
No, good questions. Good questions. Okay. Any other questions while we have DCBS up here? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Would anybody else like to speak on this bill?
Sure.
Mr. Powell?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Madam Chair, we're fine with the bill moving forward at this point. Still working with Representative Holvey and others, stakeholders in this to make sure that there aren't unintended consequences. We support basically the direction of the bill and trying to solve the issue. We just don't want to create sub-issues within it. If we can avoid that, we will bring language. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions, Mr. Powell? Okay, would anybody else like to speak on this bill? Sir? And if you can make sure you state your name for the record.
Absolutely. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Brian Niebert, legislative coordinator for Oregon Health Authority. I believe the fact that you don't have a fiscal is a holdup on our part, so I just wanted to put it on the record. We're working with our plan administrators for the Public Employees Benefits Board, PEB, and OWEB, just to look at what impact there would be with having to reimburse for co-pays and deductibles. But I have no problem with the bill and apologize if that's the holdup. Just wanted to get that on the record for you.
Okay, thank you very much. In fact, this might be the time. We will, we're going to be adjourning, but we do have to reconvene for a couple, like a minute or two, at 12:30 today because we don't have a fiscal on this bill, but we will have it by 12:30. So, need to come in, vote on it, and then go. Okay. Thank you.
Suspend the rules.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Okay. I'd like to close the public hearing and open a work session just on the adoption of the Dash 1 Amendment.
Is it Dash 2 Amendment?
Dash 2.
Dash 2 Amendment.
Are we doing
Thank
1
you.
And 2 or just 2?
Yep.
We're doing the Dash 2 amendment, and I guess it, just to remember that one of the things in the Dash 2 amendment, I can't remember if Jan spoke to it, I'm sure she probably did, but Section 2 of this bill is being added to the insurance code as well, so that's a key piece for the insurance division and the health plan providers as well.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 4104.
Okay, Representative Barton moves the Dash 2 amendments. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just a point of clarification. We've had a lot of discussion, and there's been a lot of clarification. Representative Barton, the good vice chair, mentioned, are we doing 1 or 2 or just 2? And I think what we're doing is just 1, but it's actually 2.
Thank you. Thanks for clarifying that.
Isn't that great clarification?
Thank you for
that. Brilliant.
Clarification. We could not have worked with this bill without that clarification.
We can bring someone up to clarify.
Let me bring somebody up to clarify his clarification. Okay, is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there an objection? Seeing none, the Dash 2 amendment is adopted. Now, we are going to recess until 12:30 because we do need to go through and vote on this bill because the fiscal is not in, but it will be at that time.
And back in this room.
And back in this room, 12:30. So with that, I have in recess the this, and we'll see you guys back here at 12:30. don't have to gavel, do I?
Yeah, bring us back
okay.
into
Okay, we're going to resume the Committee on House Business and Labor.
Are we in work session?
We are in recess, so we are continuing our work session.
Yes. Why don't you announce what the
Okay, but we've been out on recess, and what we are going to do is continue on House Bill 4140. We were waiting this morning. 4104. A little dyslexic. And we were waiting on the fiscal, and the fiscal is in.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4104 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves House Bill 4104 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I believe the fiscal reports there is no fiscal.
There's yes. no fiscal impact.
Okay.
Do I need to go through and say what this bill was about again?
No, that might confuse us.
Okay.
Right, we're on a roll.
Yes.
Yes.
We can do that.
Yes. The fiscal is in. So anyway, any further discussion?
Clarify.
Okay, if not, Nick, could you read the rule, please?
Representative Fagan?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Excused.
You did.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Excused.
Representative Thompson?
Excused.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Excused.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenmer?
Aye.
Chair Gordy?
Aye. Okay, motion passes. And Representative Holby, would you like to carry this on the floor?
If the committee would indulge me to do that, I would love to.
Okay, we will give you our time.
Oh, yield my time.
We'll yield our time on the floor. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 4104, and I adjourn the Committee on House Business and Labor.